in the decades. 2024.
I got a girlfriend that's better than that. She has the smoke in her eyes. She's coming up, going right through my heart. She's gonna give me surprise. Who took the money? Who took the money? Who took the money away? What was the place? What was the name? We want to wait, but here we go again. Ha, ha, ha. It's always showtime here at the edge of the show. And ha, ha, ha. No need to worry. Everything's under control. I got a girlfriend that's better than that. She has the smoke in her eyes. She's coming up, going right through my heart. She's gonna give me surprise. I got a girlfriend, she's better than that. Woo! Down in the basement, down in the basement, we hear the sound of machines. Nothing was lost.
Girl in Red, a so-called bedroom pop indie project of Marie Alvin from Norway. That's a Talking Heads cover from Everyone's Getting Involved, the recent Talking Heads tribute album. That was Girlfriend Is Better. Well, now we've done it. 100 years of music cruising the decades.com.
Over 100 years of music history. In the course of just 1 hour, you've been listening to Cruisin' the Decades with Brad Savage. This is the global edition produced for shortwave, FM, and AM stations worldwide on the leading independent community and music radio stations on the planet. This program originates at WAPS-FM, The Summit, in Akron, Ohio, USA. For correspondence or QSL, contact Brad@thesummit.fm. Thank you for supporting independent, eclectic radio broadcasting and signals over the air from all corners of planet Earth. One broadcast to an audience of many, simultaneously. A shared listening experience. Radio and 100 years of music. Join us next time for the global edition of Cruisin' the Decades.
Your dial is tuned to Freeform Radio from Carnegie Mellon University, 88.3 WRCT, Pittsburgh.
Thank you. Welcome, everybody. As many of you know, some time ago, I started talking about bird flu, and most of the audience appreciated it, understood why I was talking about it. A few folks said, David, are you fear-mongering about this bird flu thing? I don't know if it's really something that makes sense to talk about. Well, unfortunately, we now have our first human death from this new bird flu strain, H5N2. It's in Mexico. According to the WHO, there is no known contagion or exposure. And this is a critical, critical detail here. So far, the bird flu cases in humans have been folks known to have had exposure, you know, in a poultry facility, for example, or to cows or whatever the case may be. Animal contagion, animal contact. In this individual, we don't know where they got it. It's just not clear. And this now starts to take on a different sort of feel. Reuters reports person with bird flu died in Mexico, WHO says. The source of exposure was unknown. WHO maintains the current risk of bird flu virus to the general population is low. You know, when I see that, it's not about being alarmist or of burying your head in the sand. The same thing was being said about COVID-19 in November and December of 2019, and then we know what happened. So it's hard to put a lot of weight behind such a statement, but it is what we have. Additional details, 59-year-old resident of the state of Mexico had been hospitalized in Mexico City, died on April 24th. So understand that we're just learning about this, but it happened some time ago after developing a fever, shortness of breath, diarrhea, nausea, general discomfort. Although the source of exposure to the virus in this case is currently unknown, H5N2 viruses have been reported in poultry in Mexico. It was the first lab-confirmed human case of infection with H5N2 globally and the first avian H5 virus reported in a person in Mexico, according to the WHO. Scientists say the case is unrelated to H5N1 bird flu in the United States, which has so far infected 3 dairy farm workers. So those are 2 different strains. And again, importantly, the source of the infection here has not been identified. No history of exposure to poultry or other animals. Listen, I'll admit, the other day I walked by on the street and there were 2 dead birds with flies all over them. And I immediately thought about bird flu. And I immediately thought about, why are there 2 birds here? Did they crash into each other while flying? Doesn't seem like the most likely thing. I'm not saying there's evidence they had bird flu, but the point is, it's on my mind and it's on the minds of others who are texting me about this. So I don't know where it goes. We spoke to an expert about this recently. He said, listen, at the individual level right now, there's very little to do. The exposure is really not human to human. It's animal to human. And as a precaution, avoid raw milk, certainly. Cook your eggs all the way through. I have to admit, I forgot about this and had over medium eggs the other day, dipped a Jerusalem bagel in the yolk, and it was great. And then afterwards, I said, oh, wait a second. I thought I was supposed to have these eggs, egg yolks fully cooked through. But there's really not much else that can be done right now. Obviously, if you work in a place where there is poultry, that is a different story. So we're going to continue following it. I don't believe it's alarmist to talk about the fact that H5N1, H5N2 are here. We're starting to see some human cases. Beyond that, there's very little else to say, but we're going to keep an eye on it. In under 24 hours, the Biden's brain is turning to mush report from the Wall Street Journal seems to have been debunked already. Now, yesterday on the show, I came to you and I said, sir, ma'am, I'm not going to hide the fact that there is a supposedly well-sourced report in The Wall Street Journal from Annie Linsky, which appears to suggest that behind the scenes, Joe Biden is having some cognitive issues. It would be irresponsible for me, given that we've been covering the mental and cognitive state of the 2 candidates, to pretend that this article doesn't exist. So I reported it to you. I said, if these things are true, it would be very concerning. Some of the sourcing is a little shaky because it's 6 people who spoke to MAGA Mike Johnson. I don't know about that. It's Kevin McCarthy talking to a couple people. I don't know. But with my hesitation about the sourcing, it was a news story that was worth telling you about. We now have learned that the entire thing appears to be BS. It turns out that Kevin McCarthy's supposed statements about Biden not making sense are about the exact same meeting during which Kevin McCarthy previously said, no, Biden was completely with it. He remembered everything. Absolutely no concerns. And we are now to believe, according to what some are telling us, and you'll see this in a moment, that when Kevin McCarthy said Biden was fine, he said it because he felt pressure to be polite. But now he's telling us the truth, according to Siobhan Hughes, one of the other authors of this piece. It appears as though the entire thing is essentially nonsense at this point in time. Here is one of the authors of the piece, Siobhan Hughes, on CNN, trying to explain this Kevin McCarthy on the one hand, on the other hand thing.
I go to his house. He's not the same person. You also in the story mention some of the differing things that McCarthy has kind of said about Biden. So I wonder how you can kind of make heads or tails of that. It was reported, of course, by the New York Times and Politico last year that he would publicly skewer Biden, but then privately he would tell his allies that he found Biden to be sharp in their meetings.
Right.
So we heard from administration officials that McCarthy did say that the president was sharp in meetings. Our reporting also suggested that McCarthy was doing that tactically because he had to get along with President Biden at a time when the country was at really risk of a debt default if there was not some type of a deal.
So that's the explanation, folks. Kevin McCarthy lied before for political purposes, but now you can completely trust him that Biden's brain is mush because he has no political reason today to start saying something completely different. Oh, I see. When Biden is sharp, according to McCarthy, it's a tactical lie. When Biden is senile and disoriented, according to McCarthy, he really means it. And that's it. The story imploding before our very eyes. Here is another clip from CNN yesterday. They talk about whether there is dispute over the facts or not. Siobhan Hughes says there's no dispute over the facts. And CNN anchor Breonna Keeler says there's a huge dispute over the facts, actually.
I wonder, and you talk about it a little bit in the piece, the White House reaction to this. And of course, there is sensitivity because this is something that is on voters' minds. How did the White House react?
The White House reaction, I think you can see for yourself. The White House disputes what is in the story. They dispute that Biden has these bad moments. They insist that he is sharp. But what's not really at dispute is a lot of what we're seeing in these meetings. And when we talked to administration officials, frequently there was not a over what was happening, there was a difference in cast. So, for example, in the debt ceiling conversation, if Biden had a loose command of detail, well, that was because the principal is supposed to be above the fray. He's not supposed to be engaged. If in the January 17th meeting, the president, for example, is standing back, letting lawmakers do the talking, well, that's just because that's an appropriate way to run a meeting to give somebody else a chance to have their say. So there's not a dispute about the basic facts here.
Oh, there were disputes about whether people could hear him. Right?
Well, it's fine if you say you want to hear him, but the overwhelming evidence that we gathered is that many, many people did have trouble hearing him. And on balance, we felt it was important to put that in the story.
Sure.
Very, very shaky interview with Siobhan Hughes here and Joe Scarborough on MSNBC basically saying, and again, Joe Scarborough, former Republican congressman, saying this really sounds like BS.
With House Republicans to lift the debt ceiling, his demeanor and command of the details seemed to shift from one day to the next, according to then House Speaker Kevin McCarthy.
By the way, they also quoted Mike Johnson, people around Mike Johnson, and admit that this was basically House Republicans whacking.
Why didn't they just ask Marjorie Taylor Greene?
Well, exactly. Why did? They could
and
have
Lauren
just,
Boebert.
Yeah, it's really shocking, especially when you see what Kevin McCarthy has said repeatedly, publicly, and behind the scenes about Biden on those same days when they were negotiating.
The strong feelings you're seeing about this article comes also because the context of this race and these two candidates, it's interesting. That's all I'll say. Anyhow, that flies in the face of what McCarthy said about Biden's effectiveness in the past. From Politico last year, quote, McCarthy mocked Biden's age and mental acuity in public.
In public, like he did in this article.
While privately telling allies that he found the president sharp and substantive in their conversations.
So listen, here's my thought on this. The story was a big story, and it was worthy of discussion. We now are realizing the sourcing is essentially just weaponized hardcore Republicans who have an interest in seeing Joe Biden lose, as the race is slipping away from Trump based on new post-conviction polling, which we will discuss later. What I can go by, given that these are behind-the-scenes reports over which the facts are in dispute, one side says one thing, the other side says another thing. What I have to go by is what we see publicly, what the mental health professionals and neurology, Alzheimer's and dementia professionals that we've interviewed have to go by is what we see publicly. This article is about things supposedly happening behind closed doors over which there is dispute. So what can we do? We can only look at what there is publicly. And at the end of the day, even if it were true that both Trump and Biden had some form of dementia, which at this point is not in evidence, but even if it were true, I want demented Biden's staff running the country rather than demented Trump staff running the country. So in a sense, it's sort of irrelevant for voting purposes, but it is very difficult to take this story seriously at this point. It kind of seems to be the new Hillary Parkinson story. Now, some of you might say, wait, Hillary Parkinson, David, what are you talking about? In 2016, there was a similar movement that insisted Hillary Clinton has Parkinson's. There was some video where she was getting into a car and I don't even remember. She did something weird and it was being looked at frame by frame like the Zapruder film. And some people on the right saying she clearly has Parkinson's. We're going to find out about it. If you've seen recent videos of Hillary Clinton now 8 years later, you can very clearly tell that nothing Parkinsonian is going on. This seems to be the latest version of that based on everything I'm seeing right now. Let me know whether the last 24 hours of criticism changes your view at all on the Biden story. Maybe it doesn't because you never believed it. We will discuss it. We'll take a very quick break and be back right after this. Absolutely outrageous video of Donald Trump foaming at the mouth. This is some of the strangest stuff I have ever seen from Donald Trump. I'm almost confused as to how to introduce it. Trump referring to recording a number of videos yesterday during which he seemed unable to speak. Some of you may remember his "and God bless the United States" moment during his presidency, during which something weird happened with his mouth. It happened again yesterday. Foamy saliva is flying out of this guy's mouth. Take a look at this. And if you're only listening, I apologize that there's a strong visual component, but you will hear Trump's voice altered.
And we will take back our country on November 5th, 2024.
Whoa.
On November 5th, 2024.
2024.
Trump foaming at the mouth. What is happening here? And his campaign could have chosen to refilm this stuff rather than to put out these bizarre videos where there is just he's foaming at the mouth, folks, and can barely speak. And we're supposed to believe that this is normal. Now, of course, there's a number of medical conditions that can cause this. Everything as simple as dry mouth, an oral infection, acid reflux, certain meds, something called Sjögren's syndrome, diabetes, liver or kidney disease, and then Trump continuing to visibly struggle to speak. Here is Trump spitting while telling his followers to vote for him. And again, it's that same thing where he's struggling to speak, almost like his tongue is fighting his mouth. Very, very strange and scary stuff.
Many Republicans like to vote on election day,
And as you can see there, stuff just flying out of Trump's mouth. There it goes. Some conflicting reports as to whether that is actually a tonsil stone. And listen, something is up with this guy. And why not just reshoot the video? It doesn't make any sense. One more, slightly more substantive video from Trump over the last 24 hours. Here he is wearing a different tie, saying that if Trump becomes president, Putin will release the Wall Street Journal reporter Evan Gershkovich. Whereas if Biden wins, Putin will not release Gershkovich. I don't know that there's any evidence of this.
Gershkovich, the reporter for the Wall Street Journal who is being held by Russia, will be released almost immediately after the election, but definitely before I assume office. He will be home. He will be safe. Vladimir Putin, president of Russia, will do that for me. And I don't believe he'll do it for anyone else.
And as you can see there, some very strategic cuts in the video, a 20-second clip, which Trump needed at least three takes to do. And that's why you see those dramatic and abrupt cuts back and forth from Trump. So very strange videos over the last 24 hours. Trump needing edits to get through 20 seconds, foaming at the mouth, spitting or sending tonsil stones flying. I don't know what to tell you. It unfortunately did not get any better for him last night on Fox News with Sean Hannity. And that's what I want to talk about next. Yesterday, Donald Trump appeared in an interview with Fox News propagandist Sean Hannity. This is supposed to be a softball interview. It's supposed to be easy. It's supposed to make Trump look good. Trump and Hannity are friends to the extent Trump can have friends, or as Nikki Haley likes to say, Trump is my friend. And as friendly as it was, Trump seemed confused. He would answer questions that were not asked. And at one point, Trump said that the only global warming that matters to him is nuclear global warming. What?
The other night about that nuclear doesn't matter so much. What matters is, think of this, global warming. The only global warming that matters to me is nuclear global warming, because that's the real deal.
He's completely confused. He's looking around disoriented, deer in the headlights, looking at the middle distance, begging Hannity to save him. He doesn't know what he is saying. Trump brought up, or Hannity brought up, the issue of people saying Trump is going to get revenge. He's going for retribution if he becomes president. And Trump doesn't deny it. He says, I have every right to go after them. If you have any doubt as to what this guy plans to do, this 23-second clip should eliminate any trace of that doubt.
Those that want people to believe that you want retribution, that you will use the system of justice to go after your political enemies.
So, number one, they're wrong. It has to stop, because otherwise we're not going to have a country. Look, when this election is over, based on what they've done, I would have every right to go after them.
So that's how it starts. We have to stop it, but I have every right. And in other venues, I'm saying I'm going to do it. Here, I'm taking a cue from Hannity that I should deny I'm going to do it. But by the way, I would have every right to do it. Trump very lost and very confused at another point during the interview, to the point where Hannity has to say, let's actually maintain focus on one topic for a second here.
Let me go back to the foreign policy.
I say a lot of things about it, but it's whatever I say about it, it's real bad.
But let me stay focused for just a second, if I may.
Hannity struggling. Hannity's struggling to even keep Trump on one topic. And then this is where it really got weird. And women and anyone who knows a woman should pay very close attention to this part. Trump says, in a way, it's a beautiful thing to see states pass abortion bans that can even force teenage rape survivors to give birth. Trump says the entire way it's all working out is a beautiful thing.
And in many ways, it's a beautiful thing to watch. So they wanted to, for 52 years, move it back to the states. That's why they wanted to fight Roe v. Wade. Then about 10 or 12 years ago, it started getting more complex. They were talking about...
This should be shocking and appalling to people. not as Democrats, not as Republicans, not as independents, not as foreign observers of what's happening in the United States. At a basic human level, this should disgust all of us. Certainly disgusts me. At another point during the interview, Trump praising the usual suspects, Putin, Kim Jong-un, Xi, saying these are individuals at the top of their game.
President Xi of China, Putin, Kim Jong-un, all of these leaders are at the top of their game. Mentally, they're at the top of their game.
So it doesn't matter whether it's to attack Joe Biden or to cheer on their strength. It is always the usual suspects, the dictators, the authoritarians, the autocrats, and this is who Trump aspires to be. Trump getting confused about climate and weather at another point during the interview, and again, he gets that sort of lost look on his face.
He said it's an existential threat. He loves the words existential threat, that global warming is an existential threat. And he doesn't know why. What is it? It's weather. And I'm all for that. You know what? I'm in a certain way, in a very powerful way, I'm an environmentalist.
Yeah, in a very powerful way, Trump's an environmentalist. And then lastly and hilariously, Hannity says to Trump, you know, you didn't have to do this. You could just be playing golf every day, which is so funny because Trump is playing golf mostly every day.
You don't have to be doing this. You could be playing golf every day and you probably wouldn't be charged with anything.
Well, I think I say it about almost all of these cases that are brought against me. They are doing it for the purposes of hurting a political opponent.
Yeah, of course, it's not Trump could be golfing every day. He does spend most days golfing in Florida. So really wild when you have a friendly interview that's supposed to be no sweat, no big deal. And Trump's disoriented. He says it's beautiful to see states ban abortion altogether. Doesn't seem like most of the country agrees with that. And at the end of the day, this is going to really be a referendum it's going to be a referendum on a lot of things, but to a great degree, it's a referendum on Biden. How do we think the country is doing at the bottom line? But it will also be a referendum on everything that Trump has been up to since finally leaving office some number of years ago. I'm not seeing the polling that says people are pleased with what he's been up to. All right. I want to do just one more clip from this wacky Fox and Friends interview of the failed former president, convicted felon Donald Trump. This is just wild. They ask Trump, how do you pray? Do you do it in the morning or at night? Or, you know, how do you pray? And Trump responds by saying, people pray for him. And he does one of the Sir stories. It would almost be unbelievable that this is how he answers the question, except we have the video.
What's your relationship with God like, and how do you pray? That's Sharon from Alabama.
Okay, so I think it's good. I do very well with the evangelicals. I love the evangelicals. And I have more people saying they pray for me.
Sir?
I can't even believe it. And they are so committed, and they're so believing. They say, sir, you're going to be okay. I pray for you every night. I mean, everybody, almost, I can't say everybody, but almost everybody that sees me, they say it. It's such a beautiful thing. You know what's a beautiful thing, too? When you look at all of this bad stuff going on, they have nothing to look up to. They have no God. They have no anything.
Remember, Trump's not religious. This is all a farce.
They kill people. They beat people. They push people into subways. There's just nothing there.
And of course, Trump did not answer the question. The question was, what's your relationship with God and how do you pray? And he says, oh, evangelicals like me. And most people are coming up to me on the street saying, sir, I'm praying for you and you are going to be fine. You didn't miss the answer. There is no answer. And this happens every time Trump is asked about his religion. He doesn't want to talk about it. What's your favorite Bible verse? Oh, I don't want to talk about that. No, it's very, very personal. Okay, how do you pray? Well, people pray for me. He doesn't answer it because he has no answer, because this entire thing is just fabricated and it has worked. The evangelicals have fallen for it. Will they fall for it again in November? Remains to be seen. Today, we welcome to the program Royce White. Royce is a Republican running for the U.S. Senate seat Actually, Amy Klobuchar's seat, interestingly enough. Royce has been endorsed by Steve Bannon and Alex Jones in the Minnesota Republican Party. Also hosts the Please Call Me Crazy podcast, available on YouTube. Royce, if I understand correctly, in 2020 you wrote in Tulsi Gabbard, but you're behind Trump currently. Is that right?
That is correct.
So listen, you came to my attention in a clip I talked about the other day, where you said one of the issues you find right now is that women have become, quote, too mouthy. Tell me about that. How did you come to believe that?
Well, first of all, I was being humorous.
Oh, you were?
Yeah, no, I was being pretty humorous. I'm kind of a sick puppy. I got a sort of unique humor. But I will say that it is my opinion, but I think even more so a fact that the left has weaponized identity politics in our current political culture, and that the identities of women, the LGBTQ, blacks and Jews are all sort of used in a similar fashion to manufacture consent, that being an American citizen isn't so much that important anymore.
Give me an example of that. Well, so let's just pick one of those, for example.
Well, let's take all four, because they're all four fruit from the same poisonous tree.
Well, but just so that it's clear to the audience, let's just pick one as an example to show kind of your line of reasoning. How has female identity been weaponized in order to show that being an American citizen isn't important?
Well, number one, the feminist movement and the women's rights movement have been clumped into a more global citizen-based ideology, that we are all one global citizenship, and the women's rights movement is at the helm of that, much by their own powerful organization, grassroots, not only here in the country, but all around the world.
If that were the case, though, Royce, and I'm just trying to understand this, I want this to be a conversation.
But wait a second. But what I'm saying is, and let me be even more specific.
Yeah.
The prevailing consensus around the women's rights movement and the feminist movement are ideas such as believe all women. That was popular with the Me Too movement. And then you have an even more pervasive idea that in general, and it's said casually, but it's said with a lot of emphasis and potency, let's say, that men are not useful, and that women are the women in their existence in this country politically right now today, but sort of all around the world, are nothing more than a byproduct of a tyrannical patriarchy. And by that definition, or by that thinking, that men are more so a hindrance on society and
who
useless.
Says that? Who says men aren't useful? Oh, give me a name.
Well, I mean, one is Anna Navarro, self-described Republican centrist Anna Navarro.
Sat Anna right Navarro up there. Says that men aren't useful.
Anna Navarro sat right up there on The View with Joy Behar and Whoopi Goldberg and the rest of them, and she made a joke about men not being useful except for gay men because they're very good at gossip and accessorizing.
But she said it right there on national television. We started this interview with you saying, oh, what you said about women being mouthy is a joke. You're conceding what Anna Navarro said is a joke, and so you're one example.
Well, no, I don't think it's
a
joke.
Let me get the question.
I don't think it's a joke.
Hold on.
Wait a second. Let's be clear. No, I didn't. I said what I said was said in humor, but it had a lot of validity to it. I don't think what Anna Navarro said was a joke, even though it was said in a joking setting.
How do you know it wasn't a joke, though?
No, I said I don't think it's a joke.
Okay.
Just like people would say they don't think what I said is a joke. I have the right to think that. My point is that there is a growing ideology that you can see by looking at social media, which is a good temperature gauge of what people think, obviously, because you're bringing up something I said that was posted on social media.
Well, I don't want to get bogged down in this necessarily, but it sounds, Royce,
No, it's not bogged down. It's important detail.
It sounds like your one detail of the prevailing view of the feminist movement being men aren't useful is something Anna Navarro said jokingly.
No. Anna Navarro, just like you're trying to represent my views, or let's not say you, let's say the mainstream media has tried to represent my view about women in general based on one soundbite from one podcast as a general sort of
Let's not forget about it.
If you're going to keep interrupting me, then I'm going to keep interrupting you. What I'm saying is that the mainstream media, no, you're saying it's not going anywhere. I'm explaining it perfectly fine. The mainstream media is trying to depict or paint a picture of a rising, let's say, misogynist America First movement based on my one soundbite. But then you turn around and say, well, you can't talk about all feminist ideology based on Anna Navarro. What are we talking about? I'm not doing that.
Let's see if we can reframe, Royce, and then we'll move on. Okay. You've sort of been leading this, okay? You identified a number of groups. Hold on a second. Let me just get the question out. And then if you disagree with the question, then the audience can judge for themselves.
Okay.
You indicated a number of groups. You named women, and you named Jews, and you named others that are making
the LGBTQ.
It so that being an American citizen is no longer super important. We focused
blacks,
in.
Hold blacks, on a second, Royce. Women, the LGBTQ, and Jews. I want to be clear.
Hold on a sec.
Don't say other groups. Don't say and other groups. The four groups were blacks, the LGBTQ, women, and Jews.
Yes. We focused in on women.
Yes.
And I asked you for examples. And the one example that you have provided to justify the claim you made is something Anna Navarro said on The View.
No, just an example.
Well, give me another example. Who are the people saying that men are not useful?
Oh, well, that just happened to be what Anna Navarro said specifically.
But the
ideology is that men represent the remnant of a tyrannical patriarchy, and by default, the usefulness of men is in question at a societal-wide basis.
Okay. I don't want to use all our time on this, but it sounds like we're not going to get any more examples, and the audience can kind of judge that for themselves.
Hey, you can pick anybody you want. The whole Me Too movement was based on the claim that we should believe all women. Do you think we should believe all women?
Well, that we've already talked about. It's a completely different question, and it has to do with
Wait a second.
It has nothing whatever.
Wait a second. It's not a different question. It's not a different question at all. It certainly does, because there are fundamental rights of being an American citizen, one of which has always been the presumption of innocence,
number one.
So there is complete merit to bring it into question when we talk about American citizenship.
Royce, you understand that when police investigate crimes, they investigate crimes, but that doesn't take away the presumption of innocence in a court of law. Like, this is basic legal stuff, Royce.
No. It takes away the presumption of innocence in the court of public opinion.
But this is crazy.
It takes away the presumption of innocence in the court of public opinion, which now in today's world can be just as dangerous as the opinion in the court of law.
False rape claims are 0.02% of
according
all
to
sexual
you,
assault claims.
According to you.
According to crime reporting from police departments all over the country.
According to you, then why don't they bring more claims?
Who?
Why don't more make it to the courtroom?
What claim?
Because they lack evidence. The reason why police departments say, first of all, again, you're trying to sidetrack me and you keep interrupting me. You brought me on your show.
And we're not
You asked me
about
a question about women.
About.
I'm answering
but
a question
Royce,
about
hold
feminists
on a
and the
Royce,
feminist
hold on,
movement.
Hold on, Royce. You
the point is when you assume that all women are telling the truth, or that we should believe all women on face value, by default.
I don't know anyone who has said that.
The whole Me Too movement was based on this idea that believe all women.
That's your assertion. I don't believe that to be true.
Oh, okay. Well, you let your viewers decide then. Let's go to the next question.
Trust but verify is the view that I've always had.
Believe all women was the widespread commercial and cultural sentiment from the Me Too movement 150,000%.
You know, Royce, you sidetracked us on believe all women, right? You brought it up out of nowhere.
The believe all women idea is a part of the claim that women have become mouthy.
Okay. Let me ask about a couple of
and
other
I will say
in
I will say yeah. In relation of in that vein.
Yeah.
When women are allowed to say things about men with no boundaries or no constraints whatsoever, and it's culturally accepted across American culture and across political culture, that is, in my opinion, more than a valid reason to be able to say, hey, women are getting out of control. And I do think radical feminists are getting out of control. I should have been more specific,
but I thought I was being humorous. You think women are out of control. I got it.
No. I said radical feminists are out of control. Be clear. And they are. That's why they're bringing their children to drag stripper shows.
Let me ask about a couple
of things. Do you think that's okay? Do you think it's okay to sexualize children at drag stripper shows?
I don't think the children are being sexualized if they go to a drag show. No, I just don't think that that's the sexualization.
You don't think children are being... Would it be okay for me as a grown adult male to take underage kids to a regular strip club?
I don't think they're allowed, no.
Allowed to do it in... But why aren't they allowed?
Royce.
Why aren't they allowed? Is it because of the alcohol or because of the sexualization?
I don't know the laws around strip clubs. I couldn't tell you. Royce,
maybe you should learn them, though, because you're talking about drag shows. You have an opinion about the drag shows, and you say that's completely fine.
Royce, you brought
them up. But you have an opinion about
it. I'm going to have to mute you, Royce. I'm going to have to mute you.
Oh, okay.
You're bringing up topics and then telling me I brought them up. This isn't the way to be interviewed as a serious...
I didn't say that. I didn't say you brought it up. I said you had an opinion about it.
You told me I brought up Believe All Women and that I brought up drag shows.
No, I didn't. No, I did not say that. They'll be able to watch it back and see for themselves how it went. I didn't say you brought it up. I brought it up. I'm going to bring up every topic I want to bring up.
Oh, so
you white liberals are not going to tell you. Yeah, I brought up the feminist movement and I brought up the drag stripper shows as an example.
Can we continue the interview?
Oh, for sure.
Okay.
Yeah.
You brought up strip clubs. It was recently revealed you spent campaign donations at a strip club. Is that true?
That's not true.
Okay. It's been sourced very well by the Daily Beast. Where'd they get this information?
The Daily Beast, first of all, the Daily Beast is not a good source. That's number one. But number two, it wasn't well sourced even in that article at all. It was a reference to a campaign filing at the FEC that was not done properly.
Who didn't do the filing properly?
Whoever was in charge of the filing.
And who was that?
Oh, there were a number of people, I would assume, who were in charge of getting that accounting done, but it wasn't...
You don't know who the people are doing your accounting?
Oh, yeah, I know exactly. Yeah, I know who they are. Do you want me to list the entire list of people who worked on it?
Yeah.
So you have time for me to go through a list of people who worked on the filing, but you don't have time to talk about the details of the political issues you want to discuss?
Well, how many people is...
Give me a break. Who do you people think you're fooling?
I don't think we're fooling
anybody.
Who
do you people think you're fooling?
So the people who prepared
reports... I answered the question.
I'm
the question is no.
It, Royce. The people
the
who prepared
no.
the
reports... The answer is no.
The
answer to your question is no.
I haven't even asked the question yet.
You did. You asked, did I spend campaign finance money on strippers?
And you responded, and now I want to ask a follow-up.
Okay.
Your claim is there were filings which said you spent campaign funds at a strip club, but they were incorrect filings.
No, they didn't say that I spent the funds at a strip club. Or no, let's say they didn't say that I spent the funds on strippers.
But it was spent at a strip club.
Well, strip club has, they sell food at the strip club, don't they?
So you've spent the money on food at a strip club. Is that more accurate?
You seem to be very unfamiliar with strippers and strip clubs and drag strip shows, so I'll inform you, maybe
Please.
You aren't informed, that they do have food at strip clubs.
So what you're saying is the money was
spent
at a strip
club. No, wait, did you know that, though?
Club.
Did you know that?
I know strip clubs have
restaurants. Have you ever been to a strip club?
One time.
Did you like the food?
No.
You got to go to better strip clubs. Then.
Okay. But so what you're saying is you did spend the money at strip clubs, but on food. Is that right?
Well, I'm not saying that I spent the money. I'm saying that there was a filing on my FEC report that shouldn't have been there and potentially should have been reimbursed by somebody who may have been at the strip club, but that there is food at the strip club. So to say it was spent on strippers is not based on factual evidence.
I didn't say that.
Especially not from the day that you did.
I said strip club, not strippers.
No, well, okay. Well,
Which
that's
is the same
what's
thing
implied
saying,
by
right?
the Daily Beast.
It's the same thing you're saying, right? So we agree.
But that's what's been implied by the Daily
Money
Beast and other people as well.
Money was spent at a strip club by someone else in your campaign on
That's
food.
What's been that's what's been implied by the Daily Beast and other mainstream media outlets as well.
And what's the truth?
I just told you.
Someone else bought food at a strip club.
No, I told you about the FEC filing. You seem to have a lot of time for this one.
Well, it's because you're so obviously lying.
Okay. I'm so obviously lying?
Yeah, just tell me the truth. So did a staffer spend money on food at a strip club?
You white liberals have a lot of nerve.
That's
You white liberals hate when black men vote Republican. You hate when black men say that they like being American citizens. You hate when black men say that we want to have a border. You hate when black men say stop sending our money to the Ukraine. And you go to the WWE politics
Hold
to try
second,
and defend
Royce.
Your latent racism. That's
Hold
what
on
it
a
is.
Second, Royce. Hold on a second, Royce. Aren't you against identity politics?
Absolutely.
So what are you talking about white liberals for, especially when
I'm
a Hispanic Jewish immigrant from Argentina?
Yeah, right, but you have a white liberal ideology. That's what's
funny. Oh, that's something different. All right, Royce, listen, when you start hurling stuff around like that, we do have to end the interview.
You have a post-World War II democratic liberal order, white liberal ideology.
All right. The man who denounces identity politics is playing identity politics.
No, I'm not.
Royce, I really appreciate you being on today.
No, I'm not. Your latent racism is obvious. Make sure you post the interview. Don't be a coward.
And
be,
I can
free
assure
to have,
you, Royce.
Feel free to have me back on anytime so we can talk in detail where you don't cut me off. I like this kind of stuff. You people
I
don't.
I can assure you.
You people hope that every black Republican or black America first that shows up is going to kowtow and sort of, you know, curl up and run into the corner when you cut people off. That's,
okay.
That doesn't bother me.
Royce, I can assure you,
women have gotten women have
Royce, you're on
women,
a new topic now.
Feminists,
I can assure you, we will
radical
post the
feminists
interview,
in
okay?
this country have certainly gotten way
Got
beyond the pale in terms of their ideology.
Royce,
100,000%.
You have my word.
You think
we
it's okay to take little kids
interview.
To drag stripper shows, but you don't think it's okay for grown men to get the chicken wings from strip clubs.
Royce,
you don't think that that's weird?
It sounds like a campaign finance violation. It's not my opinion, but Royce, we got to end the interview.
Oh, you can get
okay?
food for donors. You can get food for donors from anywhere in the country you want.
We got to end the
cater,
interview.
I could
right,
cater
Royce.
From Mr. Chow's, or I could get chicken wings from a strip club. That doesn't matter. But
right.
you want to take little kids to strip clubs, drag strip clubs.
All
and
right,
you think
Royce.
That's okay.
Best of luck with the campaign, okay?
Godspeed to you.
All right,
don't
thanks.
Be a coward.
Vice presidential hopeful Republican Senator Tim Scott was asked on Fox News, why did you just vote against the bill that would guarantee access to contraception? Tim Scott doesn't know. He doesn't have an answer. So let me tell you what went on. Associated Press reports, Republicans block bill to protect contraception access as Democrats make election year push. Senate Republicans have blocked legislation designed to protect women's access to contraception, arguing the bill was just a political stunt as Democrats mount an election year effort to put Republican senators on the record on reproductive rights issues. The test vote won a 51-39 majority, but that was well short of the 60 votes required to move ahead on the legislation. So in comes Tim Scott, desperate to be Donald Trump's vice president. He's asked by Bret Baier, why did you vote against this? He has absolutely no idea. He has no clue why he voted against it.
Why does he do that vote today on contraception?
Well, the polls are clear that they are losing this November election. The day of reckoning is November 5th of this year. They're doing anything they can to try to demonize the Republicans.
No answer. Absolutely no answer. Here is more context with Tim Scott on the same thing, and he gets more space to explain this vote. He has no idea what is going on.
This vote, Right to Contraception Act, failed in the Senate today. It had to get 60 to get past the procedural hurdle. 39 nays. You were one of the nays.
Yes.
So for folks who... why vote nay and explain how that's not a bad issue for Republicans?
Yeah, this is just a shame that the...
Isn't this another one of these losing issues for you guys, like getting Roe v. Wade overturned? Isn't this a political disaster?
Democrats are willing to try to politicize whether or not women have access to contraceptions. The bottom line is that absolutely...
I like that when he calls them contraceptions.
...do, and that will continue. The question is why Democrats continue to take the most extreme position on abortion in the country. All the Senate Democrats have voted, not talked about, but voted for abortion up until the day of birth. The former Virginia governor, Democrat pediatrician, has suggested even infanticide.
This is one of the most disgusting lies that these Republicans have no shame in repeating, that Democrats and this Virginia story, it's about post-birth abortion, which isn't even a thing. It's not, the term is an impossible term. It's totally fabricated. It would be called murder, but they continue to repeat it with a straight face.
I'm not making this up, Brett. These are votes taken in our chamber. That tells me very clearly they're doing every single thing they can to hide from their own voting record. This is an issue that we should continue to push, because this is an issue where the American people say, wait, abortion up until the day of birth?
Remember that the question was, why did you vote against the bill to guarantee access to contraception? And he's talking about made up post-birth abortion.
That's wrong. Infanticide, allowing a child to be born and then letting it die, that's un-American. And so when you hear what Chuck Schumer suggests,
most Democrats are in that space. Why does he do that vote today on contraception?
Well, the polls are clear.
All right. And then this is where we picked up the first clip earlier. These are losing issues for Republicans. These are truly losing issues. And typically, I would say, I don't care whether it's Democrats or Republicans putting forth these symbolic votes to get people on the record. It's often a waste of time, but not always. And when it is so abundantly clear that the Republican Party has lost the American people on these issues of reproductive rights and bodily autonomy and medical privacy, it's so obvious, it actually makes sense to get them on the record. And the undoing of Republicans, I mean, listen, Trump's convictions aren't helping. The January 6th riots didn't help. The forthcoming criminal trials don't help. None of it is helping Republicans in the context of November's election. But if they really want to make this about, we celebrate the overturning of Roe v. Wade. We believe it's a beautiful thing, as Trump said to Hannity last night, that some states are completely banning abortion and trying to ban access to contraception. If Tim Scott is saying, oh yeah, of course I would vote against such a bill guaranteeing access to contraceptions, as he calls them plural. If this is what they're comfortable running on, by all means run on it, because it is it's an absolute disaster. And it's a self-inflicted one. I don't see how they win if the November election becomes a referendum on reproductive rights and medical privacy. I just don't see it. If they can get away from that, then maybe they have a shot. But if this is what they're running on, it is going to be a major failure. After years of saying absentee voting, mail-in voting, and early voting is a fraud, it is rigged, it's a scam, Donald Trump, in a panic, has completely reversed. He's done a 180, where now he is begging people, vote early, vote absentee, vote by mail, vote by smoke signals if they'll let you do it, because he realizes, as he should have realized 4 years ago, it's not a good idea to tell people only vote on election day, when many people have work schedules that don't allow that. Some people have mobility issues or transportation issues or family issues that don't allow that. It's a bad idea to tell people only vote one of the four ways you can vote. So Donald Trump putting out a statement on Truth Central where he says, quote, today we launched Swamp the Vote USA.
Truth Central.
Right. Whether you vote absentee, by mail, early in person, or on election day, we will secure your vote. Just vote. They are all good options. The way to win is to swamp them with votes. This is a very, very different perspective than what Trump presented in 2020. Even Fox News acknowledging Trump flips his 2020 stance, launches absentee ballot and early voting push. In urging early voting in his 2024 election rematch with Biden, Trump vows he'll make sure your ballot is secure. So now it's a different story. Now it's, listen, you were right in 2020 to only vote in person because we didn't secure your vote in 2020. There were sandwiches being transported by vans that were supposed to transport ballots, and some of the ballots had bamboo fibers, which means they came from China or something, and there were machines that were this and that and the other thing, and who the hell knows. It's all different now. It's all safe. Now you can vote by mail, you can vote early, you can vote absentee. Why? Because Trump has launched an organization or something called Swamp the Vote USA. This is desperation. This is flat out desperation. We see the polling continue to shift post-conviction the wrong direction for Trump. We remind ourselves he lost in 2020. He needs to take states from Biden. Which states is he going to take? It's not really clear. So he needs something, and this is what he is doing. And the most important thing to remember is that it is all Trump just using everybody and every system as a political tool for his own benefit. In 2020, he thought he would benefit from saying, don't vote early, don't vote by mail. Let's block it if we can, because it's Democrats with COVID masks who want to stay home and vote. He thought it would be bad to have early voting. Now, all of a sudden, he's realizing, wait a second, of course, all that early voting is legal. Of course, all these changes that were made are legal. Now, this is just part of the way that we vote in most states. If I tell my followers not to do any of those things, I'm just shooting myself in the foot. So now I need to tell them, vote however you can. None of this is based on any underlying principle. None of this is undergirded by any factual basis of what sort of votes are or aren't secure. And I think it's worth adding that the ways in which Trump wants to secure voting includes sending people to intimidate voters at the polls, trying to close down certain early voting places that are disproportionately expected to have Democratic voters, purging voter rolls, all of the things that we've been talking about for a really long time. That's the plan. That's what he wants to do. It's all about what's good for him. All we have to do, we already knew that we had secure elections in the United States. All we have to do is vote however it is that our state allows us to vote that's convenient for us. And then we'll see where the results land in November. We have a voicemail number. That number is 219-2-DAVID-P. Here's a caller who picked up on some very specific language I've been using when talking about Lauren Boebert.
Hi, David. We love your show. I just wanted to tell you we just got done watching Wednesday's show, and you cracked us up when you said Lauren Boebert has some stiff competition she's going to need to beat off. I'm sorry. It was hilarious. We laughed forever, and thank you. It was hilarious. You didn't even notice you said it. That's why it was so funny.
Okay. Do people in the, when I refer to the stiff competition that Lauren Boebert needs to beat off in order to win, do you think that I knew exactly what I was saying, or do you think I didn't even notice what I was saying? Let me know in the comments. Let me know in the email, info@davidpakman.com. We have a fantastic, fantastic bonus show for you today. The Trump campaign is asking for vetting records as the vice presidential search intensifies. Who's on the list? I will tell you. We also have the governor of New York indefinitely pausing New York City's congestion pricing, and already outlawed in Missouri, non-citizen voting ban legislation will appear on the statewide ballot. Why? It's already against the law. Why would you need to have that as a ballot measure? I think we know why. We will discuss all of that and more on today's bonus show. We will also hear from producer Pat, and we will have so many other exciting things happening tomorrow on the Friday show. Make sure you are signed up for membership at joinpakman.com. Coupon code SAVEDEMOCRACY24. I'll see you then or on tomorrow's show. Welcome, everybody. We have a stunning turn of political events wherein Joe Biden, through an executive order on immigration and the border, has completely taken out one of the biggest and only remaining arguments that Donald Trump had for why you should elect him, which is that he will shut down the border when there are too many people coming over. There is both a brilliance and a cynicism to what President Joe Biden has done that I want to discuss. And Biden, like me, acknowledges that whatever you do at the border is not actually going to deal with the reasons people are trying to come to the United States from other countries, and we are going to deal with that. But to a degree, it is a very astute political move. Trump is melting down. Republicans are melting down. So let me tell you what went on here. President Joe Biden has signed an executive order which says, when the number of migrant encounters with Border Patrol and immigration enforcement agencies exceeds 2,500, at any particular point. We will shut down the border at that point and say that you can no longer make asylum claims in this stretch of border. You have to do it from your country with a different process until the number goes back down below 1,500. It's relatively straightforward. It's not really going to deal with the immigration issue in a serious way. But at the end of the day, this is what Republicans have been asking for. This is what Republicans proposed in their own bill, which they torpedoed because Trump didn't want to solve it. Trump wanted to leave this problem as something to deal with when he becomes president. So here is President Joe Biden coming out swinging.
After weeks of intense negotiation between my staff and Democrats and Republicans, we came to a clear bipartisan deal. It was the strongest border security agreement in decades. But then Republicans in Congress, not all of them, walked away from it.
Right.
Why? Because Donald Trump told them to. He told the Republicans, it has been published widely by many of you, that he didn't want to fix the issue. He wanted to use it to attack me. That's what he wanted to do. It was a cynical and an extremely cynical political move, and a complete disservice to the American people who are looking for us to not to weaponize the border, but to fix it. Today, I'm joined by a bipartisan group of governors, members of Congress, mayors, law enforcement officials, most of whom live and work along the southern border. They know the border is not a political issue to be weaponized. Responsibility we have to share to do something about it. They don't have time for the games played in Washington.
This really throws Donald Trump's plan for a loop, which was Biden won't do this, and so you need me to come in and do it. Now, I think it's not really a great plan with regard to actually fixing the immigration problems that we have, but we'll get to that in a moment. Here is President Joe Biden explaining what this means for asylum seekers.
But Republicans have left me no choice. Today, I'm announcing actions to bar migrants who cross our southern border unlawfully from receiving asylum. Migrants will be restricted from asylum at our southern border unless they seek it after entering through an established lawful process. And those who seek to come to the United States legally, for example, by making an appointment and coming to a port of entry, asylum will still be available to them.
All right, so listen, the point here is if you enter the U.S. illegally, you can no longer make an asylum claim. If you find some other legal means to get into the United States, at that point you can say, hey, I'd like to request asylum. Is this going to endanger some migrants who are in dangerous situations in their home countries? Yes, it is. It would be the case whether Biden did it or Trump did it. I don't think this is a really tremendous idea, but it's what Republicans say they wanted. It's what Republicans said Biden isn't willing to do it, and you have to hand it to him from a political strategy standpoint. Now, I'd prefer to deal with this, number one, by dealing with the conditions in the source countries that make people want to come to the United States and risk coming illegally in the first place. This doesn't do that. I'd like to see our capacity to adjudicate asylum claims ramped up dramatically. We need more immigration judges. We need to be able to process more of these claims and process them more quickly. That's not what this does. To his credit, Joe Biden agrees that that's actually what we need to do.
Today, I'm joined by a bipartisan group of governors, members of Congress, mayors, law enforcement officials, most of whom live and work along the southern border. They know the border is not a political issue to be weaponized. Responsibility we have to share to do something about it. They don't have time for the games played in Washington, and neither do the American people. So today, I'm moving past Republican obstruction and using the executive authorities available to me as president to do what I can on my own to address the border. Frankly, I would have preferred to address this issue through a bipartisan legislation because that's the only way to actually get the kind of system we have now that's broken, fixed, to hire more Border Patrol agents, more asylum officers, more judges. But Republicans have left me no choice.
This is really a bungling for Republicans. They could have been up there with Biden saying he did this because of us. This is our bill. But Trump told them you got to torpedo the bill because I need something to say you should vote for me so that I will do it when I am president. And now Joe Biden gets to go up there and tout this all by himself. Now, we had a discussion on the bonus show yesterday. This is nominally something. I don't know how many people you attract versus you repel with this. And when the election will come down to 500,000 votes in 3 to 5 states, one of those 3 to 5 states maybe being Arizona, maybe there's a calculation here from Biden, which is, hey, you know what? This might upset some people who are already planning to vote for me in California, but California I'm going to win easily. But this will bring me some new votes in Arizona, which is a contested state that is not going to necessarily be so easy for me. So there may be a political calculation here that's made looking at the electoral map. I can't really tell you. What I can tell you is that this is what Republicans wanted. They didn't do it. And now Biden is doing it and making the point, by the way, that he is not going to be demonizing immigrants.
I believe that immigration has always been a lifeblood of America. We're constantly renewed by an infusion of people and new talent. The Statue of Liberty is not some relic of American history. It stands for who we are as the United States. So I will never demonize immigrants. I'll never refer to immigrants as poisoning the blood of a country. And further, I'll never separate children from their families at the border.
Speaking of poisoning the blood of our country, in an interview responding to this statement, Trump melted down and said exactly that. We'll get to that in a moment. So, is this a politically astute calculation from President Joe Biden, or is it a mistake? Well, when it comes to the states that are in question, it certainly seems to, again, cross off another item from the list of why someone might vote for Donald Trump, because now Biden did the thing. Let's talk about how Trump reacted. After President Joe Biden went right around Republicans and signed an executive order to do exactly what Trump says he would do, stop the crossing at the border, make the asylum claims be made in Mexico or source countries rather than in the United States. After Biden did this, Donald Trump gave an interview.
Before we get started, I'd like to remind you that the views, thoughts, and opinions expressed in this show are solely those of individuals involved and do not necessarily represent those of WRCD Pittsburgh and its members.
From New York, this is Democracy Now!
Like the meteor that wiped out the dinosaurs, you're having an outsized impact. In the case of climate, we are not the dinosaurs. We are the meteor. We are not only in danger, we are the danger.
Deadly heat. As we enter the month of June, record scorching temperatures are already taking hold around the world, from California to Texas, Mexico to India. We'll speak with a climate scientist in the Yucatan, where it's so hot in Mexico, howler monkeys are falling dead from the trees. And we'll talk to a climate reporter about the heat wave scenario that keeps climate scientists up at night. Then, Israel illegally drops white phosphorus on residential areas in southern Lebanon. We'll go to Beirut to speak with Human Rights Watch. Then, black women's voices are the focus of a project from V-Day, the global activist movement to end violence against all women, gender-expansive people, girls, and the earth. It's called Voices, a sacred sisterscape.
You are the sun. Where are you running to? Mother asked, deeply concerned as we darted to hide under the shade. A shield from the sun? The cracks on our skin, she said, are a celebration of life.
We'll speak with Grammy-nominated poet, Voices director Aja Monet, and playwright V, formerly known as Eve Ensler. All that and more coming up. Welcome to Democracy Now!, democracynow.org, The War and Peace Report. I'm Amy Goodman. Israel struck another UN school in Gaza where displaced Palestinians had sought shelter. Al Jazeera reports several people were killed in today's attack on the UNRWA school in the Shati refugee camp west of Gaza City. This comes a day after an Israeli strike on a UN school in the Nusayrat refugee camp killed at least 40 Palestinians. Video footage has confirmed U.S. munitions were used in Thursday's strike. The New York Times reports remnants of the Boeing-made GBU-39 bomb were uncovered. Al Jazeera also published photographs of a missile fragment made by Honeywell. The UN school had been turned into a shelter for displaced Palestinians. At least 14 children were reportedly killed in Thursday's attack. A number of other children were injured, including Imad al-Makadmeh, who spoke to a reporter as he lay on the floor of Al-Aqsa Martyrs Hospital in Deir al-Balah.
Why did they bomb us? Why? I want to know why. Why? We are all children in the school. There are no armed people. I don't know why they bombed it. Where should we go? Where? Where should we go? Here or there?
Israel claims Thursday's strike on the UN school targeted Hamas militants, but Israel's presented no evidence to back up the claim. In other news, the UN's warning of a possible cholera outbreak in Gaza this summer due to a severe lack of clean water. In Washington, D.C., congressional leaders have confirmed Israeli Prime Minister Benjamin Netanyahu will address a joint session of Congress July 24th. House Speaker Mike Johnson, Senate Majority Leader Chuck Schumer, along with Senate Republican Leader Mitch McConnell and House Democratic Leader Hakeem Jeffries, joined together to invite Netanyahu. In a letter, they wrote, quote, "We invite you to share the Israeli government's vision for defending democracy, combating terror, and establishing a just and lasting peace in the region," unquote. The invitation comes just weeks after the head prosecutor at the International Criminal Court, Karim Khan, announced he's seeking an arrest warrant for Netanyahu for committing war crimes. A number of lawmakers have vowed to boycott the speech, including independent Senator Bernie Sanders. In related news, CNN is reporting the CIA has circulated a new assessment that concludes Netanyahu will likely defy pressure